This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your smartphone, tablet, or desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
I'm Jeff Combs. I'm everywhere on Star Trek, and you keep tuning in to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 149, Don't Mention the Joystick. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me this week is Philip Gilfus. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including the Timescape visual effects controversy, the launch of Star Trek Axanar's official podcast, and Star Trek episodes that can work as stage plays. Then in the feature, we're joined by Daniel Prue for a TNG Films Face-Off. So let's step into The Ready Room. Hello, Philip. Thanks for joining me on The Ready Room today. It's TNG week, but we're going to be doing a special TNG show. Instead of an episode, we're going to be doing the TNG Films Face-Off today with one of your co-hosts from Earl Grey, Daniel Prue. But before that, I understand you've been spending a little bit of time on the stage yourself this past week.
That's right. I've been in a particular frame of mind, and I am in a Seussical, the musical, and I play... Dr. Seuss, the works of Dr. Seuss, sort of in musical form on the stage. I play a character called General Genghis Khan Schmitz, and he's about the closest thing that Seuss has to a Klingon, really. I guess the best way to describe it. So it's been fun. I just finished my last weekend. Last weekend was my performance, and then I'm going to finish it out this next weekend here, and then that'll be it, and move on to the next production. Now, it's been a little challenging, Chris, because I haven't had Beverly directing me. So that's right. What I'm used to, right? So, but I've managed to get through it.
I will not do plays unless Beverly Crusher is directing.
Yeah. I know, like some other people, you know, if they had her as a director, it might be a little too distracting for them. But you know, so it's been fun.
Yeah. Well, for me too. I'd be forgetting my lines. I'd be just gazing at Beverly. But anyway, well, that sounds like fun. It reminds me of long ago when I used to play in orchestra for musicals like that, for theatrical productions, and it's great fun. Well, Philip, we have just a few news stories today. We're going to try to keep the news segment short because this TNG film feature that we're doing, I know, is going to run long. But I did want to get your thoughts on this story that has been out over the past week or so about the Blu-ray for TNG and the visual effect from Timescape that wasn't fixed, and Mike and Denise Okuda explaining why it wasn't fixed. As a TNG fan, I wanted to know if this bothers you, if these types of things in general bother you, and what you think about the explanation.
Well, and I guess it's all about the philosophy of the Blu-ray. And I know you've talked about this a little, but I'll quickly perhaps say the same thing in a real quick fashion. You know, when TOS did their remastering, a lot of the goal was to clean it up, to modernize it. I mean, not completely. They you know, there's the big pull. We want to keep a lot of this, the spirit in which it was done. But as much as we can make it better, we will. You know, fix a lot of things that, you know, it's now the late 20th, 21st century. We can do this now. And so I feel like with TNG, that's not, wasn't the goal, really. It was just, you know, to Blu-ray it up, you know, to make it high definition, to bring out what's...
Preserve the original work.
What was already there, just to bring it out. Yeah. But they have fixed some things within these seasons that they have already released. And like, I know one that's been talked about a lot is the encounter at Farpoint 1, where, you know, the energy beam coming out of the bottom of the saucer, you know, which I never really thought about, honestly.
Yeah, neither did I.
And then I'm like, because I mean, honestly, in an encounter in Farpoint, I didn't know that was the Captain Jock, because, well, heck, 7 years later, I didn't know it was the Captain Jock. I've never seen the darn thing. But anyway, so, but they fixed that. And so, but that's cool. I don't mind them fixing things. Like, I'm not one of those once it's done on screen, you can never change it. You know, I mean, don't go crazy, but you know, if you can fix it up, that's fine. But yeah, the mistake that you're talking about here is in season six here in Timescape. There's a power transfer, you know, if this is the episode, if people remember, where, you know, there's a warbird in the Enterprise kind of frozen in time, and, you know, they're trying to fix out what had happened here with the power transfer, and that apparently comes out of, you know, the port side of the engineering section of the ship instead of the deflector array, even though that's dialogue that says that's where it's coming from. And apparently the Akutas, you know, I feel like I have to genuflect when I say their name, the Akutas have come out and said... The reason that that wasn't changed is due to some, you know, artistic choice of the, you know, the original people who worked on that. And so that, that it's not being changed, and they support it not being changed, which I don't know. I don't get it. I guess it would. I wish they would explain what the artistic choice was. Like, what's the concept I'm supposed to be?
That's the thing for me. Like, I agree with them that if something is an artistic choice, don't change it. Just preserve it, because that's the way it was done. And I think there are a lot of cases where things were artistic choices and they've been left, or there are some cases where things have been changed and they were artistic choices, perhaps. This one I really think is a mistake. I don't think it was an artistic choice. At the same time, I don't care if it's fixed or not. It doesn't affect my enjoyment of the story. It's not important to me. But I saw someone who posted in a comment thread that they think CBS should do a recall of all of the season six Blu-ray packages, fix this, and then send new discs to people. That seems extreme to me.
No, I don't think it's extreme at all. I think they should, in fact, recall all the Blu-rays and make it three-dimensional. I think that's really what TNG deserves. They should be holodeck programs. If I can't experience it within the confines of my holiday.
Oh, I understand the confusion now, Philip. You heard Blu-rays are HD, and you thought that stood for holodeck.
Yes, it doesn't. Oh, man. well, now my expectations have been lowered. Okay. Yeah. No, I mean, it's you know, it doesn't matter, honestly. I mean, one way or the other, honestly. Change it, don't change it. I don't care. You know, I mean, you know, if... It's not like there's a phaser coming out of the photons, or the photon comes out of a warp nacelle or something. You know, that would be weird.
Now, that would be one, like, if a photon torpedo came out of the warp nacelle, I might say you should fix that.
I mean, that does happen in Generations, but it's a different thing. It's one of those things, I think. If it's on screen for 2 seconds, 3 seconds, 4 seconds,
yeah, you know, don't worry about it.
You either just
make an example.
The fun part is you make your own explanation in your head why.
Well, that is the fun part, right? Yeah, that is fun. That's where headcanon really takes on a life of its own. One in TNG that they fixed in season two in the Royale is that on the uniform, there's the patch. And in the original episode, they used the Apollo 17 patch. It's just the real patch there, because you can't really tell what it is that well in SD. But of course, in HD, you could completely read the patch. And so it's the Charybdis mission patch, but they changed it so that in the Blu-ray version, it actually has, you know, the first mission beyond the solar system has the names of the astronauts. They changed that. And I can understand why they did it, but that's another case for me where I just leave it, you know, what it was before.
Yeah, I mean, and the way I solve that is I don't watch The Royale because it's a horrible episode.
The Royale is a cool episode, Philip.
I just don't wear cowboy hats the same way you do, Chris.
I don't know what it is about that episode. I actually like that episode. I know no one likes it. And I know it's cheesy, but, you know, baby needs a new pair of shoes.
Oh, so. Gosh. Don't encourage. Oh, Lordy.
All right. Well, again, I just wanted to get your thoughts on that. We'll put a link in the show notes to an article on Trek Corps where they have side-by-side of these things. They also have video of the scene from Timescape, which is at the center of the controversy. Next thing we have today is something I just want to tell everyone about. This is network news here. We have launched a new show because, Philip, we don't have enough shows, do we?
Well, wait a minute. Chris, are you on any of these shows here on Trek FM? You're just on the Ready Room, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I just hang out here all the time. Not anything. But so I am on this new show as well. But this new show is actually the official podcast of Star Trek Axanar. I was actually asked by Alec Peters, who is the creator and the executive producer of Star Trek Axanar, who is also the founder of PropWorks. People may know him from that. And Alec wanted to take fans behind the scenes of Axanar as it's being produced, because, Phil, have you seen the trailer? Have you seen Prelude to Axanar?
I have. And I think this is, I mean, not only is it an exciting project in and of itself, but I think, you know, this is very, and this is going to sound stupid, but I'm going to say it anyway, very 21st century that, I mean, this is how things should work now. They come out, you get the commentary at the same time, you know, I don't know, mini episodes. I'm just making things up. You know, you get all these things, but I mean, that's how this is. And I think this is going to help make, you know, these fan efforts, and I know they kind of don't like that term, but these fan efforts, like Axanar, is such from the heart that it's something that you can share here. And having this own podcast is going to just expand that heartfelt fan experience even more.
Yeah. Well, what they're doing with it, I mean, the production value is, it really is beyond a fan film. It's, I call them independent productions because it really is, the quality level is right on par with anything that Paramount or CBS would have produced in the past. And the cast, you know, you've got Richard Hatch, you've got Michael Hogan, Kate Vernon from Battlestar Galactica, you've got Gary Graham reprising his role as Soval from Enterprise, J.G. Hertzler.
You mean Councilman J.G. Hertzler.
Councilman J.G. Hertzler, that's right. I'm not sure if he's wearing the big hat that I see him wearing in all those photos about his position on the town council in Axanar, but you've got him in there, Tony Todd. The cast is just all-star, and the visuals being done by Tobias Richter look fantastic, these battles with the Klingons. It's really quite a production, and so we're really excited to be part of this production and being the ones who are producing the official podcast going behind the scenes. First episode is out right now. Alec Peters and I are co-hosting the show together. We have Christian Gossett, the writer. Many people may know him from his work on comics. He's actually the creator of the double-bladed lightsaber that Darth Maul uses in The Phantom Menace. He has his own comic, The Red Star, which is quite renowned. Christian joins us. We talk about the background to Axanar, writing the script he and Alec co-wrote together from the original story. And then in the second episode, which will be out next Sunday, or the Sunday after you hear this.
And I'm excited about this one.
This one is, again, Christian, Alec, and me, but we're joined by David Gerald, who wrote The Trouble with Tribbles, to talk about the Axanar script, talk about Klingons here, because, you know, David's script was that's when the Klingons became the villains in TOS, in The Trouble with Tribbles. And he has some very interesting insights on Klingons and how they're being used here as well. So this podcast is going to drop on Sundays alongside Literary Treks each week. And we're going to be having cast and crew from Axanar on in different combinations every week to really take you behind the scenes of this production. Prelude to Axanar will be premiering coming up very shortly at San Diego Comic-Con, and then production on the full Axanar film will begin. So stay tuned for that. Right now, you can get the podcast in iTunes, SoundCloud, should be on Stitcher in a few days. It will be on all the other sources that we distribute through later on in the week, into next week. Of course, you can stream from our website as well. So go subscribe and tune into this, and I'm really excited to be part of it.
And Chris, when you have David on, please ask him to explain the difference between Klingons and Klingons.
Okay. I will do that. All right. And also you can get that in the Trek FM Complete Master feed as well. Those episodes will be going in there. All right, Philip, we have one more thing to talk about in news today, and I pulled this one out specifically because you are on the show today and because you do theater. Our friend Dayton Ward, the great Star Trek author, he writes a column on StarTrek.com called 10 for Ward. And he does lists, and this time he did 10 Star Trek episodes that can work as stage plays. And I wanted to hear your thoughts on his selections, and also which ones you would choose instead, because you told me on the other side of the room...
The other side of the room.
...that he forgot the most obvious one.
Yeah. you know, there it's a lot of interesting choices, and we can read them real quick, I suppose. But it comes from all the various series; it just doesn't pick one. So I'll just read them real fast and just go back to them. Arena from TOS, Far Beyond the Stars from Deep Space Nine, The Measure of a Man from TNG, Tuvix from Voyager, In the Pale Moonlight, DS9, Albatross, which I was like, I'm not familiar with that title. Why not? Animated series. Bride of Chaotica, Voyager, Demons, Terra Prime, Enterprise, Inner Light, TNG, and Spock's Brain. Of course, TOS. So now I imagine the only problem with Albatross is the costuming. You're going to have to find a lot of pastels. A lot of pastels.
You need a lot of pink also for that one.
So I'm not familiar with that episode, so I can't talk too much about it.
But okay, well, Albatross, I'll just tell you what the story is. So Dr. McCoy is being held prisoner, and he's been accused of mass genocide by causing a plague. But in the past, 19 years ago, on a previous mission to this planet, Dromia. And so the Enterprise goes to check it out. They get infected as well. And then at the end, the Dromians agree to forget about McCoy's unorthodox treatment and solution there. They let him go. And there had been a stowaway on the ship, so the Kirk's going to let that slide. And this almost sounds like something from TAS Season 4 on Twitter. Spock scolds McCoy for forgetting to dispense vitamins to the Enterprise crew.
Yeah. It's I look forward to that day I sit down and do with the TAS thing. But the other episodes, I think a lot of them do come across as obvious. And, you know, I think anytime you do a trial, that's very theatrical. So The Measure of a Man, you know, that's kind of obvious, I suppose.
Yeah.
Arena, that'd be interesting. I mean, almost, I think, to a certain degree, and not, you know, Standard Orbit guys can comment on this. I want to say the majority, a plurality, I'll say that, a plurality of TOS are all stage plays. You know, you can do almost all of them on the stage. You know, you got a bridge set, a planet set, you're done. You know, that's about it. And I think, you know, because, I mean, that era is very stages. You know, I mean, stage-ish is what I'm trying to say. You know, the 60s, 50s television, I mean, it's pretty much like you're doing a stage play for the most part. Now, I know they did locations eventually for a lot of TOS episodes, but almost I think any TOS episode you can probably do as a stage play. But I think a lot of these are very interesting, like Demons and Terra Prime. That one I do find to be a challenge. Do you think that's kind of an obvious stage play, Chris? I feel like that's kind of it's a good Enterprise. I know you love that, but it's kind of hard to be on the theater, I think.
I think it's more of a stretch than most of these. But then again, if I think about like a real Shakespearean production, or if I think about an opera, I can see how you could do Demons and Terra Prime on the stage, yeah. But it's a stretch, definitely, compared to the other ones here.
And I think another challenge, because I don't know how you would do this, Bride of Chaotica. So would you, would the audience members have to have special glasses to make everything black and white?
Right.
That would be, I mean, you could do makeup and then black, you could do it. You could do
now,
it.
That would be cool, though, if it were makeup, like everyone's faces are painted as well, and all the costumes are black and white, yeah.
Yeah, it'd be fun to do. And I think another obvious one, you know, especially you as a Niner, in the Pale Moonlight. I mean, that's pretty much a soliloquy for Sisko. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think that, you know what, the challenge for that, make it a musical. I would want to hear It's a Fake. That'd be a breakaway musical number. It's a fake, it's a fake, it's a fake. That'd be great. That would be that.
I can see the posters like outside in Times Square where you've got Vrenak holding the rod.
Yes.
And it's like, a fake with exclamation points at the end.
And like the theater would be come see it. It's a great. So, you know, it'd be.
And the souvenir shop would have rods that you could buy and take home.
And then there'd be a guy next to him
with the logo of the musical on it.
There'd be a guy like with his trunk open selling them, and they would be fake. But yeah, so I agree with a lot of these. Tuvix is another weird one. You could do it. I think the hard part there is, like, you tell someone, we're going to cast you as a main character of Voyager. It's Tuvok and Neelix. Awesome. You're going to get 10 minutes stage time. Tops. Because this guy who we got, Tuvok, is going to be in there the whole show. So that would be the whole thing. Now, I think these are all good ideas. Anything with a trial. I think the obvious one, Chris, Frame of Mind.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is a play.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's why I was saying the obvious one. So,
we actually have a poster that we did here at Trekka Film that we've never released. It's a theatrical poster for Frame of Mind.
Oh.
Yeah. One of these days, maybe we'll release it for people.
And honestly, another great one, and it's TNG day here on the Radio Room, so I'm going to be TNG-centric. Another great one would be Barclay's first episode, because I think, and I'm blanking it for a second, the episode title, but Barclay's first appearance on the Enterprise with all the holodeck programs, Holo Pursuits. I mean, that would be great with all the costuming and everything. That would be the way to go.
Yeah, that would work well. For me, the ones that aren't on here. Now, first of all, Spock's Brain. I would love to see Spock's Brain as a stage play. The one that... actually, there are two from DS9 that come to mind. Waltz, which really is a stage play with Dukat and Sisko in the caves together. And also Duet, I think, from Season 1, which is, for me, is where DS9 actually starts to become DS9. Between Kira and Maritza, those scenes would be perfect for the stage as well. And from Voyager, I think Death Wish could be an interesting stage play.
I think another one for Voyager, and I'm blanking on the name, of course, is the one where the Doctor is discovered in the future, in the false history one, and he has to explain what really happened on Voyager because they have this distorted idea of what the Voyager was all
about. Oh, right,
right, yeah. Yeah, because I think that would be a great staging, because you'd have sort of be able to have the EMH and the history person kind of walking in the scene as it happens, where you have the evil mirror Voyager people, and I think that would be definitely a cool production there.
Yeah, that could be interesting too. There are so many options in Star Trek that you could do as a stage play, really. That's what we need. We need a series of stage plays.
That's right. Now, which ones would be musicals? I think that's the better list. So, Dayton, if you're listening,
that is what I like.
Top 10 musicals, Star Trek.
Yeah, that would be awesome. So anyway, interesting idea here. Let us know what you think about these. Which Star Trek episodes would you like to see as stage plays? First of all, to go with Dayton's article. Second of all, to go with our idea, which ones do you want to see as musicals? We want to know that as well. Send us some email, send us some messages. Trek.fm/contact, use the form there. Hit us up on Twitter, username is TrekFM. Also Facebook, facebook.com/TrekFM. All right, and we'll put a link in the show notes to Dayton's article over there, because Dayton actually, we just gave you the names, Dayton actually explains why he thinks these should be stage plays. Well, Philip, that is all we have in news today. Before Daniel joins us to talk about TNG films, we need to tell everyone about our sponsor for today's show, Audible.com. They're the best source for audiobooks that you'll find anywhere online. More than 150,000 titles waiting for you right now. Hundreds of new titles every single week. I actually need to go count. They've got to be getting close to at least like 170 now or so. But as a Trek FM listener, you can get one of those books absolutely free just for trying Audible. And as this is a Star Trek show, we like to recommend a book for you every single week, and we like to make that a Star Trek book. Philip, I understand you have something you'd like to recommend today.
Yes, I'm recommending, as an audiobook available on Audible.com, is Star Trek The Next Generation Reunion. And this is not about Riker going back to his college graduation and, you know, hooking up with his old girlfriend. That's not what this is about. This is about Captain Picard meeting his old Stargazer crew. You know, as we know Captain Picard is very famous for captaining the Enterprise D and the E, but he's actually also really famous for captaining the Stargazer. And we never, other than the one episode where we kind of get the ghost images of him having his hallucination due to the Ferengi, we never get to see or talk about any of these people that he knew for like 20 years or something. And so in this audiobook and book that's written by Michael Jan Friedman, who's, of course, a very prolific and famous Star Trek writer, you can listen to this about it. And it's kind of a murder mystery. You know, it's sort of like he has a reunion with all of his some of his Stargaze crew members, and then they start getting knocked off one by one, and it's sort of the mystery of who, why, when, where. And, you know, as we all know, Picard likes a good mystery, Dixon Hill-like. And this one's narrated by our favorite director, Gates McFadden.
That's right, Enterprise Theater with Gates McFadden.
Yes. And so, you know, she narrates this one. So it's a definite recommend for anyone who wants to kind of get the other story of Captain Picard. And so his two crews meeting and what goes on and who did it. Was it the butler officer? That's who I'm thinking it was. But anyway.
Or was it the fencing officer?
That's true. That's true.
Because he's up to something when you know, he's got a lot of time on his hands.
And he has a weapon. So, yeah.
Right.
So I would say give it a listen. Go to audible.com and use our offer code and listen to either Reunion or the many other many Star Trek titles they have for free and have a good Star Trek novel experience.
Definitely, yeah. I love these books. I had most of them on cassette tape back in the day, played them in my car, wore them out. So I was very happy when I was able to get them again in digital format from Audible. I can't wear those files out, apparently. My hard drive can die, but I can always re-download it from Audible. So go grab Reunion or any other book you like, absolutely free, just for trying Audible. audibletrial.com/trekfm is the URL, and we really thank Audible for their support of the show, and we thank you for supporting Audible and helping us keep the Ready Room coming to you every week. When the TOS cast set foot on the big screen, it was a dream come true for a generation of fans who had supported the show through the dark 1970s. For fans of The Next Generation, however, the experience was quite different. As soon as the final episode wrapped, the cast jumped right into shooting their first movie. The result was a film that felt more like the next TV episode than a major motion picture. Or did it? That's what we're going to find out today as we discuss something a little bit different here on the Ready Room. Instead of our usual episode discussion format, we're going to bring you a special show that we've titled TNG Films Face Off. We're going to discuss each of the four TNG movies, what we like, what we dislike, and how they compare to one another. And to help us do that, we're joined by another third of the Earl Grey Unholy Trio, Daniel Prue. Daniel, welcome.
Hey, Chris, how's it going? I kind of expect that now that we're doing the TNG film face-off, I remember very vividly that the Generations poster has half of Picard, his face, and half of Kirk's face. Right. Maybe at some point in that movie, they both peel off their faces, and one is John Travolta and the other is Nick Cage, maybe, possibly? Is that what's going on?
I think there is a hidden scene on the Blu-ray, an Easter egg, if you will, where that actually happens.
Makes sense.
So you guys were recently called, along with Darren, the Unholy Trio, right? In a review of Earl Grey.
We were. It was, well, I've never been part of an Unholy Trio before, so this is a new experience for me. But I guess I'm good to go to be at least 33% unholy.
So guys, for this format, instead of picking topics like we usually do for our episode reviews, we're going to go through each movie one by one, talk about what we like, what we dislike, and how it fits into the overall four-film family for each of us. So let's kick things off with the Generations. Of course, this is the film that was the debut of the TNG cast on the big screen, but they had to share the limelight with some of the TOS crew. And of course, it was the passing of the baton from one generation to another, as Picard gets to cook breakfast with Captain Kirk in a cabin. And this film had a little bit of everything for all Star Trek fans. Daniel, what do you like about Generations?
Okay, I guess I'll just get into it. You know, I was just rewatching Generations as part of my rewatch just the other day, actually. And I have a really weird relationship with Generations. It seems to me that every other time I watch the movie, I really enjoy it. And then every other time it alternates, and every other time I can only see the flaws in it. So this was actually the time that I saw it for a lot of the good that's in this film.
Is that like an odd and even viewing thing for you?
I think it might be. Yeah. So, I mean, there's some of the TOS movies did this as well, but there's a scene about halfway through the film where there's a captain's log, and it shows, you know, captain's log, and it shows the Enterprise, you know, flying over the camera. And I'm like, oh my goodness, this is just a TNG movie. Like this
feels like an episode.
Yeah, exactly. Right? It feels directly connected.
Yeah.
To the show, especially as a TNG fan, you know, maybe that prevented a little bit of the whiplash that we might have been feeling since we got All Good Things and then we got Generations, and it was like right there. I like, of course, seeing the Enterprise D in glorious HD, even if they take the opportunity to just to crash her and blow her up.
They show you what you love and then destroy it in front of you.
Yeah, I like some of the new stuff that they bring in. I like, for as much as we tease the holodeck, I think it's used very well in this film, in a way that makes sense and seems to be appropriate for TNG characters to use it. Like, we could have a normal promotion ceremony for Worf, or we could do it on a ship from whenever, you know, the 16th, 17th century, and that makes sense. You know, so it's got a lot of TNG tropism in it.
Yeah,
there's some slight techno babble and stuff, but it feels very TNG. You know what I mean? We don't have this new ship, you know, some new crew. Like, it's just the most that we get that we aren't used to is really bright lights and some extra stations on the bridge.
So you like seeing the TNG crew as we knew them on television on the big screen?
Yes, especially knowing that it was only a few months after.
Right, right.
Like, if they had waited, then it would have been different. But I appreciate that it was like a bridge.
Right.
A bridge.
Oh, and what do you...
Oh, there's lots of bridges in that movie.
And what do you dislike about Generations?
Oh, boy. Okay, so the biggest problem with me for Generations, and I'm the biggest proponent in the whole world of crossovers, but it's wasted potential, essentially, is how I feel about it. Like, it seems like they were only half committed to the idea.
Right. Yeah,
and I know the original idea was to bring Spock and McCoy instead of random Chekhov and Scotty, and for whatever reason they didn't want to do it. But I wish, if you're gonna do this idea of this crossover movie of passing the torch movie, let's make it Enterprise on Enterprise action. Let's fully commit to the idea and make it happen. But they don't do that. Instead, we get watered down dialogue and we get like you said, this movie is not super long. So one of the lines of dialogue between Captain Kirk, everybody's childhood hero, and Captain Picard, the most popular Star Trek character on TV, you know, at the time, was, "Can you give me the dillweed?"
And it was it's behind the oregano.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Like, in the one moment when Captain Kirk is walking up the stairs and he's like, "I don't need to be lectured by you. You know, I was out saving the galaxy while you were, well, your grandfather was in diapers." Like, that's what I wanted to see more of. That's what we should have seen more of. But it was wasted on like a lot of this silly Nexus stuff. And I don't know. I just the
I like the look that Philip just
it
gave
makes
you.
Me wonder
when you said silly Nexus stuff.
How many original series crossovers on TNG had them saying the word diapers? Because we had diapers from Scotty and diapers in Kirk. Did Spock say it in Unification and I missed it somehow?
So wasted potential. So, that was my biggest. And there's a lot of problems with the film. Truly, there are. But that I think that's more of what really bothers people is, like, if you're going to put these two iconic crews or characters on the same movie, like, you should capitalize on both of them and not maybe kill one off in a not really dignified way.
Yeah.
Wait, Picard died?
I'll tell you later.
Okay.
So then, Daniel, where does Generations fit in for you amongst the four movies? Like, if you're ranking them, which is your favorite, which is your least favorite, where does it fall?
Like I said, that might depend on if it's an odd or even time of viewing right. the film, but I'm gonna say it's number two.
Number two, okay.
Yeah, wow. I'm gonna say it's number two. I recognize its problems, and have a lot of issues with it, but sometimes it gives me really good feelings. Seeing the Enterprise D warp away at crazy explosions from planets, you know, we didn't get to see a lot of that. And I don't know. It has its moments, and I appreciate it for what it is.
I think it has the most cleavage of any TNG film also.
Probably true, yeah.
And on that note, Philip, tell us what you like about Generations.
I can think of another cleavage quote from another movie, which I'll bring up. Well, I mean, I would think, Daniel, the one thing you didn't talk about, your biggest disappointment, is that they drained out Cetacean Ops and put Stellar Cartography right in there.
Oh, I don't know about that. They just apparently...
Philip, remember, though, that's actually a good thing, because now we know that Commander Flipper lives. He was not on the ship when it was destroyed.
That's true. Which was our hashtag.
He knew.
Following that movie, even though Twitter didn't exist.
Yeah, he sensed it, like the dolphins in So Long and Thanks for All the Fish. He knew something bad was going to happen, and he left beforehand.
That's right. Livingston was, you know, because that fishbowl was destroyed at the end of the Generation.
So that took place between All Good Things and Generations. Livingston came on the bridge. He had a little musical number and then just floated away into space.
Now I'm seeing like the little fish with a little hat and a cane.
Hello, my baby. Right. Hello, my darling. Hello.
Okay, so Philip, what do you like about Generations?
Sure. Well, of course, I'll have to do a little plug here. In Earl Grey 15, the movie that should write itself, we had the Standard Orbit guys on, and we talked Generations between us. But anyway, Generations, this was the only movie that I didn't see in the actual theater, because I was 13 at the time. So there you go. But so that was the only one I've only seen, you know, on the small screen. But I was told by a friend who saw it that the moment Picard hits the force field, like, everyone jumped in the theater because of the sound. But yeah, it's a disappointing movie. I mean, I don't dislike it, but the good things, like Daniel said, of course, seeing the Enterprise crew doing their thing on the movie screen, that's always exciting. You know, Worf getting promoted. I mean, we get to see some progression there. And really, my favorite part is, anyone who listens to Earl Grey knows, Worf, I mean, forget promotion. I mean, even though it's deserved. The man gets a chair, for goodness right. sake. He gets a chair after 8 years on that
We
ship.
Had to be careful with chairs, though. You remember that Seinfeld episode where they gave the guard in the clothing store a chair, and then he fell asleep and the place got robbed?
Robbery? Yes.
The actually. Enterprise could be destroyed.
So,
actually, the Enterprise is destroyed in this movie, and Worf got a chair, so... Connection?
And maybe this whole time... Troy has just been the scapegoat, but it's really the fact that Worf is sitting down that caused the destruction of the Enterprise.
It could be, yeah.
The shield modification button is way on the left here, and if only he had been standing up, he could have modulated shields. But no, I do like, and again, unfortunately, like Daniel said, I do love what they did with the bridge, of making it, you know, there's like now 25 people on the bridge, which we would see in the later movies too. But it was nice to see all those additional things, the wheelchair ramp. But I mean, I really like that. I mean, I did enjoy seeing the Enterprise B. I know that is not Daniel's favorite show, if you'll listen to the latest Earl Grey. But the Enterprise B, I did like seeing that connection. I mean, Generations, not only are we getting, you know, the Kirk and the Picard, but we're also bridging it on the Enterprise B. And so it was interesting to kind of, you know, put that last sort of ship into the history there, because we'd already seen the C on TNG and the D on TNG, and we'd seen the original on the A. And so it was good to finally see the B and old Captain Tuesday. I mean, I like that.
Old Captain Tuesday.
What else? I mean, I don't know. I don't want to be too negative, but it is sort of a short list of things I like.
Well, so what do you dislike, without being too negative? Oh, but what do you dislike about Generations?
Yeah. I mean, and again, I don't hate Generations, but it's I think this is probably my biggest problem, is how Picard was in this movie. Because, you know, I don't want to jump ahead. We see Picard not at his best in other movies. And so that's fine. It doesn't have to be that Picard is 100% happy-go-lucky Picard in a movie. But he was just like literally like crying in his, you know, Earl Grey this whole movie. And it's and not that it didn't make sense, but it's just like, you know, I feel you're going to put him in the movie and he's just gone for half the movie, basically. Like, where's the Picard that I've known for 7 years. I want to see him on the movie screen, you know. Weepy guy, can we save him for the second one? You know, but anyways, that was kind of a disappointment. And like, he couldn't land a punch, right, to save his life. Just gets beats up by Soren. I mean, he has fought. I saw Starship Mine. Picard knows how to fight. But obviously he makes up for it in the next three movies. But, you know, it sort of is a lot of Kirk focus, you know, which, goodness, you know, Captain Kirk deserves focus. But I think there's a lot more like all the glory goes to Kirk in this movie. Again, which is understandable. But hey, from a TNG perspective, I'd like to see my characters doing their thing. And it just seemed like a movie where they're just checking the block. Okay, I got to destroy the Enterprise D. Let's do that. I got to kill Kirk. All right, let's do that. And like, you know, is it the box checking that's driving this movie, or is it a good thing? You know, and I think the ship gets destroyed way too easily. And you know, it's just kind of a like, really, this is the first movie and we're doing this? Okay. Which, I mean, I get it. I'm sure Star Trek folks felt that way with the motion picture. So it's to me, it's disappointing. Not terrible. It doesn't hurt my heart to watch it. Cough coming off. But it's just sort of a, yeah, they did this, didn't they?
So where does it place for you then? Does it place last? That's what it sounds like.
It does. It comes last at third place for me.
Third place.
Philip, stop it, Philip. Stop it, Philip.
Oh, goodness. All right. Well, so for me, I did see this in the theater. Actually, I've seen all of the Star Trek movies in the theater, I believe. This movie for me, because I saw it in the theater and because it came out right before Christmas, always has a holiday connection for me. And it's not just because of the Christmas tree in the Nexus with Picard, but there's something about the music to it as well, and just the memory of going with my friends to the theater to see this. And so it kind of has a special place for me just for that, because of sort of the holiday feel. I remember the time when I saw it. I went into this movie, I am also, I guess like you, Daniel, where I have sort of mixed feelings about this movie. And I went into another viewing of it yesterday thinking, okay, I'm going to figure out what I like and what I dislike about this movie. And I came away with the feeling that there actually isn't so much that I really dislike about this movie. It's a mishmash of a film for sure. And overall, it feels like a TV episode, which is not necessarily a bad thing. I think what I like about this movie compared to the others is seeing the Enterprise D on the big screen and seeing it lit more in the way that the ship would be in space instead of this just bright lighting that we had on the TV series. The ship feels so much more like a real starship, and the mood on the ship feels more realistic. So I really like that. I love seeing the Enterprise B. I won't go Terramin yet. I'll leave that for my dislikes about the movie. I love seeing the Enterprise B. I remember watching that champagne bottle flip through space. I'm like, what's going on here? What's going on here? And then you see the label, and you're like, okay. And then it hits the hull, and they pan over, and it says 1701B on it. And it was just the greatest thing in the theater when they panned over. And I love that scene. And I also, I love, now Soren isn't the greatest villain, but I love the conversations between Picard and Soren, because this whole concept of time and what it means to each of us, and how often for many people, and I'm sort of in Soren's shoes, where I feel like time is a predator that's after you all the time. And especially as I get older, I feel that way, and I look back and I think about how much time has passed and what's ahead, and you start feeling like time is catching up with you, right? So this really connects with me. It always did, but especially when I watch the movie now. And I think that Malcolm McDowell is brilliant in those scenes where he talks to Picard about that. The things that I don't like so much about the movie are, I agree with you, Daniel, that it's sort of a missed opportunity with Kirk. If you're going to put Kirk in the movie, I think that there should have been more to it than what we got. I personally would rather see this movie without Kirk in it at all. Like, tell the story about this Elorian who is trying to get back to this place called the Nexus without having to have Kirk come back and help Picard. I think that would have been more interesting for me. And then you could keep the B part at the beginning, which is sort of the bridge, but then just make it a TNG movie after that. and that would work for me. So,
well, I mean, Chris, I think one thing that I do like about Soren that you mentioned is that often we sort of get the two-dimensional villains. Mm-hmm. But one thing about Soren is at least he explains himself. Right. You know, there was a time in my life when I wouldn't hurt to fly. And then the bull came and you kind of like, oh, well, I mean, I get his motivation. And a lot of times it's just like, I'm bad because harumph.
Right. You're not talking about Nero, are you?
Also, Chris, you know, you might empathize with Soren's opinion on time, but if you just adopted Riker's attitude, you'd be totally fine.
Right. Well, Riker, I mean, he needs to live forever. There are so many women in the galaxy.
That's true.
And at this point, you know, he's not with Troy, so that's what's on his mind.
Oh, gosh.
I think.
They're always not together, together, not together, together.
So there are a lot of things that I like about this film, but the things I don't like about it are, again, the feeling of sort of the missed opportunity with Kirk, it feeling like it's kind of wedged into the film because they felt a need to pass the baton officially on the big screen from Kirk to Picard, and I'm not sure that that was actually something that needed to be done. I think that because, I mean, I grew up with TOS. I was a TOS fan long before there was a TNG. And I think The Undiscovered Country was the perfect send-off for the original cast. And the ending of The Undiscovered Country is moving and it's great and they sell off. Let that be the end of it. That's all we needed. So I don't think we needed to pass the baton. Harriman. I think the casting was horrible. I have nothing against Alan Ruck, but as a captain, it didn't work. And there's also the problem, like maybe Alan Ruck would be just fine as a captain if the movie were about him. But Kirk has to be put up on the pedestal in the movie. Kirk is going to save the day. So you almost need to have this other captain be kind of incompetent so that all the spotlight is on Kirk and he can take charge. But then again, this guy's the captain of the Enterprise, the captain of the flagship. An incompetent person isn't going to get in that seat. And so that felt really weird to me. The other is like the indecision. And I know some of the background behind why it happened with production and time and such, but this mishmash of uniforms, like make up your mind, what are you going to wear? Like, I don't need to have the TNG uniforms and then the DS9 jumpsuits mixed together. It just make up your mind. Just make it all the regular TNG ones or make it all the jumpsuits, but let's go with one.
And I feel like that's like, it's almost a perfect metaphor for this movie. Like you have two good things.
Yeah.
But maybe you don't need them. You don't need to shove them together. Maybe just let them be their own thing. Pick one and go with it. And that's fine. But it's just the fact that you're trying to pigeonhole two separate things into one thing. Maybe it's not going to work every time.
Yeah.
The problem is they try to do all good things.
Right. Well, speaking of that, I mean, the sad thing is that they wrote the script for this movie and they wrote the script for All Good Things concurrently. And All Good Things is a much better story than the movie is.
And for both of those scripts, it was a combination of Ron Moore and Brannon Braga, right?
Right.
They both were. See, so, and this is just, you know, the silly fanboy in me, but I blame Generations on Braga, and I give all the credit to Ron Moore for All Good Things.
So for me, talking about emotion real quick before we move away from this, Philip, I think that, like, I don't mind Picard getting emotional. It seemed a little bit out of the blue, though. And again, if we had a few years pass between All Good Things and this film, that would have maybe felt a little more natural. But it was so soon after that it did feel sort of out of the blue. At the same time, what they did with the films is that they took the opportunity to actually evolve the characters, which they didn't do on the series because it's an episodic series, you don't want the characters to change so much throughout the series. It just wasn't the nature of the Next Generation storytelling. But when they get to the films, then they can really do something different with the characters. And so they started to add more dimension to Picard which I like, but I do see where it felt a little bit sudden. And then with Data as well, with the emotion chip, I think that that is something that was needed for his character growth. But I've always hated the scenes with where the emotion chip starts malfunctioning and he starts telling cheesy jokes and then, oh, he can't stop laughing. When I watched it this time, though, it didn't bother me quite as much because I got that they have to show that something is going wrong here. But they took it a little bit too far for me. So that didn't quite work with Data. But so for me, where does this place? I'm probably this is sort of a tie for me for second/third. It's probably second, but not by a lot.
I always go back and forth between wish fulfillment. Like, in other words, you know, and Geordi and, you know, Eyes and Data. I know that's not this film, but Data emotions and Riker command, which, I mean, that one makes sense. But, like, all these wishes fulfillment and, like, movie comes and we're going to sprinkle the wish fulfillment fairy dust that everyone gets everything they ever wanted. I'm like,
except for Beverly and Troy, who still didn't get a real big part to play.
At least Beverly gets to meet the EMH.
Yes. In the next movie that we're going to talk about right now. So good segue, Daniel. First Contact. Of course, we don't really need a summary of this. This is where the Borg come back to destroy Earth and the Enterprise saves the day. And it also sets up the Enterprise episode Regeneration because Borg get frozen in the Arctic. So, Daniel, what do you like about First Contact?
Everything. I love this movie. I mean, goodness, what is there not to love? We get the Enterprise-E, which, of course, the listeners can go to listen to our Earl Grey episode where we talk all about the Enterprise-E.
Tune into Daniel's new podcast, Nacellecast, where he talks only about starships all the time.
All the time.
It's 2 hours, 1 hour for each episode.
So on the left side, we get this gorgeous new ship. We get the new uniforms. We get the Borg, of course. You know, at this point, I don't think Voyager had started working with the Borg yet, right? All we knew about the Borg is what was on TNG before, and all of that was good, except for Descent. but you know, TNG, the Borg was a TNG thing, and I'm pretty sure everybody was like, okay, let's get the Borg in a movie because that just makes sense.
Yeah.
And I absolutely love the fact that they also decided to make this a quasi time traveling / universe building movie as well. I love that we get to revisit Zefram Cochrane. And I love what they did with him. Like the idea that history remembers things differently than they really were.
Yeah. See, I like that as well. A lot of fans get upset about that. Like, that guy is the person who invented warp drive, but I liked it personally.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, he's not going up in that thing sober.
Exactly. Or without his Steppenwolf.
Yeah.
And I don't know. There's not a lot to complain about in this film, I feel like, except for nitpicks.
Yeah.
This is what we wanted to see in a TNG movie. And I feel like with a lot of the other movies, like they went overboard with action or drama or comedy, but like this one kind of has a perfect blending of everything. Mm-hmm. And again, it's almost like two separate films between what's going on the Enterprise and what's going on the ground on Earth. And we learn a lot about Star Trek that we never learned before. For the first time ever, somebody says Star Trek, right?
Take a drink.
I don't know. I don't know what's not to like for the most part about this film.
Well, Daniel, I know one favorite part, and I'm not trying to start a fight here, Chris, but I know one favorite part for Daniel is everyone who's talked about how powerful the Defiant is. It lasts like 5 minutes against the Borg. Is that it? About it?
I do. And let's be fair, too, though. That scene, that moment where the Enterprise-E swoops in to basically save the Defiant, it's a beautiful shot. Like, it's an amazing, amazing shot. And it's really, obviously, the first we get to see of the Enterprise-E in action. And, like, for some reason, that line always stands out to me. I don't know who that guy is. I guess he's from Deep Space Nine. But the only other guy on the bridge, the guy at helm on the Defiant, is like, there's an incoming ship. it's the Enterprise. And like, I loved that. And like, it was like, yeah. There it is to save the day. And
Picard's it was like, a fantastic visual. The thing about the Defiant being there, though, is this is the only time that it makes sense why Worf would end up on the Enterprise.
Yes, it does. Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Because when we get to Insurrection, I'm just going to say this right now. First of all, Picard, it's your starship. How do you have no idea that Worf has come aboard the ship when you're out in space somewhere? And then he walks down the corridor and he's like, Worf, what the hell are you doing here? Remember, they're in the middle of the Dominion War, right? And Worf's like, well, I was at the Marzon colony. And then the audio fades out where the writers are like, we're just not even going to try to explain this.
It turns into Charlie Brown, like adult speak.
Chris, that was Worf's cover story.
Okay, so back to First Contact, though. So any dislikes, Daniel, for First Contact?
I mean, again, if I'm trying to think, honestly, like I could nitpick some of the plot elements, but.
Well, I know, Daniel, I'll jog your memory. I know you're not a fan. Which one? You're not a fan of the data part? Didn't you tell me that?
Oh, okay. I mean, I understand, like, yeah, that's true. And it's kind of an element that I kind of forget about, only because, especially like the sexualization of data, which is kind of a big theme, right? It's like that he's going to experience these things. Of course, at first he gets emotions and now he's gaining sexuality, which I don't know. It's kind of creepy. It's just weird.
What was really creepy, we didn't see on camera, but the Borg Queen, when she had him tied down there and she was doing the skin and breathing on his face, she actually had, across the room, we couldn't see, she had the holographic projection of Tasha Yar over there and was making Data watch it the whole time.
Oh my goodness. Wow, this sounds like a really interesting scene. I don't know where to go with that. So I'll just ignore it. And,
the Borg Queen, I mean, she's really creepy. You know?
Yeah, it's true. It's true. It's just, like, I understand what they were doing. Okay, yes, I have one big criticism. And it's this idea of a Borg Queen, actually.
Yeah.
Just kind of the concept of it doesn't really make sense.
Right.
We've been told, and a lot of the impressiveness and scariness and interesting factors from the Borg come from the fact that they are a faceless, nameless, entity-less. It's just a wave of
that beings. Just comes at you and you can't do anything other than run away from them.
Right. Yeah. And of course, a lot of people might respond with that. Hey, well, they turned Picard into Locutus, but I thought that was, he wasn't in a leadership position. He was in a spokesperson position. So whereas we get this feeling that the Borg Queen is in charge, like everybody listens to the Queen and she just does whatever she wants. And
no, Daniel, she brings order to chaos.
so she would just not get along with the Joker very well, I don't think.
Okay. But yeah, there's a movie. No, there's a comic. IDW, we need that. The Borg Queen Joker crossover comic.
Yes. So that would be my biggest. I think it might be the start of the, possibly the defanging of the Borg.
It is. Yeah. That's how I feel too. So where does this movie place for you?
Oh, number one, of course. Number one.
Okay. Like I think we'll probably ask.
This might be unanimous. I have a feeling.
All right, so Philip, First Contact, what do you like?
Of course, I'll also do the plug here for Earl Grey 23, Secret Garden of the Enterprise E, where we did our First Contact one.
He is the Locutus of Earl Grey on this show.
That's right. So, sorry, Mrs. Sisko. Hashtag too soon. When it comes to First Contact, I mean, yes, it is, like Daniel, my favorite. And the reason I like this is because there are three stories that use almost every character. Yeah. No, I mean, I'll say every character. Even Beverly's,
Even Troy gets to do the countdown when they launch the Phoenix.
Yeah. Well, no, Troy gets drunk and, gets
and Barkley. Barkley's in the movie.
Exactly. So, I mean, I love the multiple storylines. Geordi, Riker with Cochrane, Data, in his thing, Picard and Worf and everyone else fighting the Borg. I love the music. I mean, I don't want to repeat, but uniform ship, yes, yes, yes. You get to see both the inside and the outside of the Enterprise E. I mean, it's not another complaint, but like we never get to see the Enterprise E what it looks like normal because everything's dark and red alert and assimilated, but we get that in the later movies. But yeah, I mean, I was edge of the seat, literally. I mean, like, no reason to be, right? But I'm like, you know, at the end with Data and the Borg Queen and their fiery torpedoes, like, oh, what's going to happen? I don't know. I mean, I was there. This was like, you know, as much as a movie can get you. But I do love the humor. I mean, it's the humor's there, you know. Not many people know I went to Zefram Cochrane High School, but it's also the Data flesh story, the sensuality, and everything's there. I mean, a good use of the emotion chip, coming from Generations. We get to see Geordi's eyes, which again, that's wish fulfillment. Whatever. I would have been fine if he stayed in the visor, but I get it. Whatever. We'll go with it. So yeah, I mean, like, it's just a great, funny, suspenseful thrill. And then again, to complain about how Picard was in Generations, here in First Contact, he's also very un-Picardy, but it makes sense. In Generations, he's like, okay, which I get it, but it's just, you know, that's not. But you know, here in First Contact, yes, we saw this in I, Borg. We saw this in Family. This makes sense.
That's so, what we said recently. We did Borg here, and we said that if you watch I, Borg, the way Picard behaves in First Contact makes a lot more sense, because some people have a problem with Picard in First Contact, and they think that it's not like Picard to get that angry or have this streak of vengeance against the Borg, but I think it does make sense.
I agree.
Yeah, because I mean, I think if you watch all of Next Generation, you'll see where all these characters are constantly doing these things and having these reactions over time. And so, I mean, it totally makes sense for Picard in this mm-hmm. context. And it's just great. It's just great. No complaints. I mean, I get to sit here and talk about all the wonderful things, but that's it's a great movie. I know that's why they always rerun it. Number one, you know, for the next generation. So.
So for you, this is number one, obviously.
Well, yeah, for bad things, I really can't think of anything. No, I mean, really, I really can't think of any. I'm sure there's, again, a nitpick maybe, but I can't. I don't have a problem with the Borg Queen. I think it's great. No, I really can't think. EMH, come on, the EMH is in here. Neelix is in here. They finally put a privacy screen on the holodeck, for goodness sake. You know, everything is there. And then, so, yeah, I guess for my ranking, it's my number one film.
Well, for me as well, this is a great film. It's like the perfect storm for The Next Generation. Everything came together. It feels like a motion picture. That's the first thing. After Generations felt most of the time like a TV episode. A few times it felt like a movie, but First Contact really felt like a motion picture. And just the visuals and the direction and the acting and the writing and everything is just really excellent throughout this movie. You did mention Troy getting drunk, and it's one of my very favorite scenes in the movie is Troy drinking with Zefram Cochrane. When her head hits the table, Jonathan Frakes' look is so perfect that I don't know how you could ever capture that again that perfectly. It's just one of my most memorable moments from the film. But everyone is good in this film, and really for me, I love the message in the film. I love, again, the discussions that Picard has with Lily. I love the use of the holodeck. I love the callbacks to the series. I love that he goes to the holodeck and he types in and it comes up on the screen, the big goodbye. And he picks a chapter and you go in and there's just so much TNG flavor, and they plucked just the right things out of the series. My only real complaint about this movie is the one that you brought up, Daniel, which is the Borg Queen. And I don't mind the Borg Queen in this movie. I think to do this movie, you have to have her. Like, this movie wouldn't work if the Borg were just this wall of zombies coming at you relentlessly like they were during the series with The Best of Both Worlds, for example, or with Q-Who. So you need a face for the movie. There has to be a villain. But at the same time, it doesn't really make sense as to who the Borg are for there to be this Borg Queen. And I think it is the start of the defanging. You know, we're all generally very hard on Voyager for ruining the Borg, because Voyager, the latter seasons of Voyager for me often should be called Star Trek Borg, because they just use the Borg so much. they don't use them as much as you think they do. And I actually wrote an article a couple of years ago about this, and I outlined every single time Voyager used the Borg. And it's not as often as you think. But it's often enough that they went to the well so many times that it becomes uninteresting. And then for the finale, they go there again with the Borg Queen. And when you make the Borg an enemy that you can negotiate with and that you can talk to, it weakens what they are. And that's what they did in First Contact. Although it doesn't really weaken them in this movie for me, but it sets up what makes the Borg uninteresting as you go through Star Trek. But that's my only real complaint, and it's not really a complaint about the film itself. So this is my number one film. It's the film I watch the most of the Next Generation films, and it's just, I think, a great story from start to finish. So I really love this one.
Yeah, it's an interesting retcon with the Borg Queen, because remember, she was there during Best of Both Worlds. So, you know, it's an interesting how you want to play
And also
them,
interesting kind of is that that retcon kind of works. Like, you don't hear it and go, oh, that's a lot of BS. She wasn't there. You think, oh, okay, maybe, yeah, I can understand. Maybe she was. Like, if she's everywhere.
Except why she looks so different from the other Borg. She should have just been white. Anyway.
She has the same armor and everything, but white instead of black, so that you can tell that she's different from the rest of the Borg. Yeah. All right. So, Insurrection. Let's go to that one now. Daniel, what do you like about Insurrection?
I'm just going to be over here, guys. Go ahead, Daniel.
So, this is going to be the start of the breakup of the Earl Grey crew. Philip and I disagree on this to an extreme degree. So, I really, really liked Insurrection. When it was called Who Watches the Watchers?
that is also, when I was in the theater, I immediately said, "What they are? Is this a follow-up to Who Watches the Watchers?" Before we actually saw the people, really, that we knew what was going on? Yeah.
I think this is a mess of a film. I think it is TNG's version of the motion picture. I feel like it's this is my personal criticism, but I think it's a slow, boring film that is probably technically the closest of all the films to how the show went.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like taking an episode of the show and extending it.
Yeah, it is.
To twice the size and not having not having an interesting plot enough to do that. Cause you can do that and make it interesting, but Insurrection does not do that, I don't think. Okay, that's stuff I don't like, that you asked me what I do like.
it sounds like you don't have anything that you like about Insurrection.
Not a lot. I guess Data floating is kind of silly.
Worf's pimple? Oh, come on.
See, this is what
okay.
I mean.
But Worf's pimple. Okay, I've always thought that was weird. Then yesterday I'm watching, and finally I realize, you know, Worf's pimple is there because it is the first sign that... Right. These effects are happening and the crew is regressing and becoming younger. It's so, for me anyway, it's so subtle compared to the other ones that I didn't really pay attention to it in the past. And I just see it as like, okay, because there are so many other bad jokes in this movie that this is just another bad joke. But actually, it does relate to the plot.
Worf, Chris, how can you miss that? That thing is, Klingons don't do anything small.
That's true.
Was it a gourd? I don't remember what it was called anyway.
Gourd. I don't know. The Enterprise
Daniel
E is
scratches
in the
his head. I can't think of anything positive to say about this film.
The Enterprise E is in the movie, which is great. I like that. Actually, the whole bit where Riker goes off on the ship and does what he does, that's not bad. I don't know.
Don't mention the joystick. Don't mention the joystick.
I will not mention that. Actually, I will mention that under things I don't like. Okay, I'm just going to move on to things I don't like.
Okay.
Everything else.
Things you don't like. Everything else.
Stretchy face alien guys who happen to be the same as the guys on the planet. Chris, I know this is not going to be a... This isn't you are going to disagree with me on this, and that's okay. We can represent a lot of different opinions here on Trek FM. I feel like the Baku, to me, they're reminiscent of the Bajorans. And I don't think the Bajorans are interesting in any way. I think certain Bajoran characters are. But I feel like they're very boring, plain people. And they're just like these people who are just like, we live simply, and aren't we great and awesome? We don't need technology. And it's just like, it really annoys me. It irritates me because they're like, yeah, we did space travel before it was cool, but we don't have to do that anymore. And it's
Philip,
like,
I think,
man,
some artsy people have done something bad to Daniel at some point. He's got it out for these people that like crafts and things.
How did they hurt you? How did they hurt
you? It's true. Except, I guess, you know what it is? The Baku, they didn't fight well for a spiritual people. So, you know, maybe the Bajorans have that on them. But, I can't think of many redeeming features. And I would have been okay if this movie never happened.
Wow. Okay.
I can't think of a reason this movie exists. I don't
okay,
know why.
Okay, so this is fifth out of four for you?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. 100%. Yeah.
Okay, Philip, what do you think about Insurrection?
Yes, completely different. Okay, I love this one. And I'm going to admit, it's been a while since I've seen it, so whenever we do our Earl Grey Insurrection, maybe I'll completely flip, you know, several years later. But, you know, no. I do enjoy this because I love that there's actually, because, you know, Generations is what it is. First Contact is a good old-fashioned flick. I mean, there's stuff there. I mean, I love the beginnings of First Contact and Data and Flesh. And so there's stuff there. I mean, you know, it's not just boom, boom, bang, bang. But Insurrection, actually, we're going to actually go with the story. We're actually going to have a moral play. We're actually going to have, you know, things are at stake here. The stakes have never been higher.
The battle for paradise has begun.
I know. I was watching the trailer. It's stupid. But anyway, but the actual story, all of the trailers for Next Generation movies are stupid. Actually, the Nemesis one was actually good, I think. But anyway. But, you know, I do like the, you know, the reveal. Oh, no, we've broken the Prime Directive. Oh, no, we didn't. It's cool. Sorry. I like Picard's, like, apology. Sorry. Sorry, guys. We'll be going. I love the CGI, the whole invisible Data. That's pretty cool. And the holograms. And, oh, you know, Data, Picard, and Worf singing. Oh, my God. Come on. Gilbert and Sullivan, for goodness sakes. I know, Daniel, you're not familiar with those crew members, but they are great in Insurrection.
See, I don't know how I feel about that scene. When I first saw it, I kind of rolled my eyes. And every time I've watched it since, I'm kind of
singing along.
Not really. And remember, I'm a musician, and I've actually, you know, I used to play in musicals as well. And I love the music. I felt like it's a very TNG thing to do, but I felt like they were trying too hard to put humor into the movie. In that respect, it's almost like this is TNG's Star Trek V, where we're going to make it funny because the last movie had some funny stuff in it. So we're going to make this one funny on purpose. Kind of like that. I felt a little bit like that with the Gilbert and Sullivan.
So which crewman has the marshmallow dispenser, just out of curiosity?
Oh, y'all are terrible at missiles. No, but it is a great part there. And but I do love Picard's love interest, because he hasn't had a love interest. No Generation. And I like that we don't feel the need to do that in Generation. We don't feel the need to do that. I mean, Data, I suppose, has a love interest in First Contact, you know, for what Lilith. But we didn't make Lily a love interest in First Contact, right? You know, every movie wants to be like, hero has to have a love interest. No, they don't. You can make a movie without doing that. But anyway, so I love that. I do. It's very interesting. I know Daniel finds them boring, but which I can get. But I like it. I mean, it's more of what your tastes are. And I'm a little more intellectual. Daniel likes big nacelles. Look, that's where his mind goes.
Our listeners can look forward to next week's Earl Grey without Philip Gilfus.
He'll be doing decaf edition again. So I love that perfect moment stuff. I'm a sucker for it. And that exploring, you know, what it is to have that kind of mentality and all these disciplines. I love Data being a kid. And I know people might think that's stupid. But, you know, every movie it's Data exploring, you know, Generations was the emotion chip, sensuality and First Contact. And Insurrection is the childhood. You know, Data's never had a childhood. His legs and arms have always been this length. but playing in the haystacks. I mean, I know people might think it's creepy or stupid, but I think it's fun, and I think it's cool to have the child stuff going on. We get to see a good Picard speech. You know, we had no Picard speeches in Generations. I guess a little bit with Soren, and maybe at the end as the tag. But we did have a good one in the first contact.
He gave Kirk a speech.
One,
you are a Starfleet officer. Yeah. You have a duty.
Yeah. Almost the same speech you have a duty. He gives to Wesley, kind of.
Yeah, no, first duty. But Insurrection, we have that in the Admiral's face. How many people does it take before it becomes Admiral? You know, it's just great, 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 you know.
Yeah.
And we have a Badmiral. Come on, folks. Badmiral finally shows up.
Well, I call this movie Star Trek Badmiral now, by the way.
Yes. I mean, we have Badmiral Janeway in the next one, but that's neither here nor there. But, you know, here in Insurrection, we have – so those are all the good things. And I could probably go in a little bit more. But bad things. And I do have bad things. I'm going to – you know, I don't, you know, worship this, you know, movie in any means. But I do think it has a lot of good things going. But bad things. I think the plot contrivance – and Daniel mentioned this. I mean, like – and I think I saw a Gates McFadden quote once that, like, if I just used a tricorder, this thing would have been over in five minutes.
Right, right, right.
You know, so it is kind of a, really, it took you 2 hours to figure this out. So that's kind of silly. And like you did mention, you know, this actually is a movie that was supposed to be Star Trek IV with the funnies. Like, and there's some lines that I just, oh, God, that line didn't happen. Like, the one, you know, we talked about cleavage generations. Yeah. The cleavage quote in this one just rolls my eyes. You know,
oh, yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Troy and Bever talking.
But the thing is, like, you said this was supposed to be Star Trek IV. For me, First Contact is Star Trek IV, where there is humor in both of those movies, but it happened naturally. And this is Star Trek V, where off the heels of successful, sometimes unintended humor, very natural humor, they forced it. And it didn't read well.
So if the listeners are keeping track, this movie has now been compared to Star Trek 1 and Star Trek 5. So that just gives you an idea of maybe.
A little bit.
And 4, I
right
guess.
There, yeah. Do I hear 6?
Yeah.
Did
yeah.
I hear 3?
No.
I was trying to figure if anyone wrote their signature during this movie. This isn't a complaint. For the record, this is not a complaint. But Daniel knows there is a special place for Troy and Riker. So that's here. And that's neither good nor bad. I'm just saying people know I have that's just weird. They are weird. They are
somewhere
weird.
Somewhere on YouTube, period. I'm pretty sure there is a remix of just the bathtub scenes from this movie. So where does this rank for you then on your list of TNG films?
This is second for me. This is second. So yeah, I mean, I think there are some... Yeah, I don't know, the joystick, like, yeah, you know, whatever, because the troll girl checks him out when he does that. But anyway, I would say there's probably like 10% of this movie I would cut, but there's a good 90% for me that I do love the, because it's an adult. And I don't mean this in a, but if this is an adult movie, this is not where First Contact, you can be like a 16-year-old enjoy it. You're probably not going to enjoy this if you're a 16-year-old Insurrection.
This is not a general audience film like First Contact was. This is really for Next Generation fans, I feel.
Yeah, for real ones.
Well, I'm not going to say
so what
real,
he's saying
real
it's
ones,
for, it's,
say,
for
it's for people
citizens.
Who really know the characters and
really
are
know
fans
them.
Of the series TNG, whereas First Contact really appealed to a broad audience. So
yeah, it's for real people for TNG.
So for
Chris,
me...
You were saying all these things he's taking as an insult to me.
So for me, Insurrection is a film that I actually really like. Now, I remember going to see this in the theater and walking out and thinking, meh, it's kind of a letdown after First Contact. Like, I feel like they didn't really bring their game on this one. But as I watch it more and more over the years, I've come to really like this movie. It is, and the first thing I tell people when they bash Insurrection, which most fans seem to do whenever you mention Insurrection, they're like, oh, that was a horrible film, or why are you watching that? Someone tweeted me yesterday, obviously nothing else is on if you're watching that movie. And I always tell them that, you know, this movie is the truest film to TNG. If you love The Next Generation and you love the characters on The Next Generation, this is the movie. This is where you get them. This is where you get the TNG story. It does feel like a two-hour episode. There's no doubt about that. It doesn't feel like a motion picture. It feels like a two-hour episode, all the way down to the CGI and the graphics and everything, especially now that we have TNG in HD on Blu-ray. It really does feel like a two-hour episode. But it's a great story, and I love Donna Murphy in this movie. I think Anij is fantastic. And the fact that, because we always see Picard as the oldest member of the crew and he's the wise one that everyone is looking up to. And suddenly you've got Anij, who's way, way older, hundreds of years older than Picard. And although physically they appear to be the same age, and so the love interest part isn't quite as creepy as if you think about Picard making out with a, you know, 309-year-old woman or however, older than that, because they came there, I think it was 309 years ago, right? But he is a young person to her, not the elder statesman that we see him, you know, the fount of wisdom that we see him as usually. I love the interaction between them. I love when he goes to the door and he just says, "How old are you?" And he's realizing what's going on. And then the conversation that they have after that is great. And I think it's great commentary on Star Trek when they tell Picard, like, yes, we have warp capability, but where can it take us except away from here? It's sort of that counterpoint to the idea in Star Trek that more technology is always better. It's like there's more to life than technology. So I like that. And I love when Picard, when they say we couldn't fix the positronic net, and he's kind of taken aback, and he finds out they have warp capability, and he just says almost sadly and embarrassed, like, I apologize for our intrusion. And throughout the film you get that too, because this film shows the corruption of the Federation that's increasing, you've been seeing it more and more through the Dominion War on DS9, and here you can see that it expands beyond just what's going on Deep Space Nine, but it is the Federation itself, like any government, becoming corrupt. So I think this film is great. I think it has a great story. I don't like all the forced humor in it. I don't like things like Data wanting to feel Riker's face and then shaking his head, like, you know, smooth as an android's bottom. And there's just so much of that in here that I think detracts from the story. The manual steering column is probably the worst idea ever in Star Trek. It's worse than the holographic communicator on Deep Space Nine. It's ridiculous that you're going to fly a giant starship with a joystick. But, you know, you got to show off for the hot Trill ensign that's next to you. So
I do want to say one thing, Chris, just to give a little more positivity to what I had said. Listening to you talk reminded me, I do like the opening scene of the film. Yeah, you know, with Picard being like, remember when we were explorers and they had the whole diplomatic scene? I like that. That was fun. That was very TNG-esque, yeah, yeah. I think, as well. Yeah.
And the aliens that are eating the flowers. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know Chris loves that they're on a diplomatic mission.
Right. So, but the things I don't like about this movie are primarily the forced humor. I'm not a big fan of the Sona, like the makeup. I don't know. I didn't buy them as villains so much. So there's a little bit of that, the Sona element returning home to their people, the Baku. Some of that didn't work great for me, but the interaction between Picard and Daugherty and the other things I talked about here, I think are great. My biggest complaints about this movie, besides the forced humor, are a feeling that the studio was going through the motions at this point. The marketing of the movie, the poster was literally the first contact poster with the Borg cube replaced with a planet and the face of Ruafo over where the Earth was in the first contact poster. It was just like, we need a poster for this. Can you just reskin the poster from First Contact? And a lot of the feeling, especially at the beginning, the visuals, the Starfleet officers, the acting of the people that were in the facility that were monitoring the Baku, it really started to feel like they've become too comfortable with the visuals and the style of Star Trek at that point. I had a little problem with that, but I think it's a great story. And for me, it's the one that's tied with Generations for 2 and 3. As the story goes, I think this is probably number 2 for me, and Generations is 3rd. But Generations has more of sort of a nostalgic connection for me overall. So I tend to put it a little bit higher than Insurrection. But I don't really get the bashing of this film that goes on so much.
Well, and let me add another negative, even though since I've been so positive, I feel like I've earned that.
I like this. I don't get the bashing of this film. And then Philip, let me just add another negative to that.
Yeah. Well, I'm always devil's advocate. Star Trek Insurrection doesn't make any sense. There's no insert. I mean, I feel like
the title doesn't make sense. No.
Like, they want it to be like Picard and the crew go against the Federation, right. Which, I mean, they do, but it's not like that big of a deal. Like, it lasts for 30 minutes. You know, it's not like Kirk stealing the Enterprise or you know, it's not like I think what they wanted to do. So, I don't think the title works.
No, and
I think
the title,
like you were saying, Chris, the marketing was sort of like that, yeah. You know, Picard, I mean, it's not that. So I think that's a little hyped.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
So it's a bad title.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think that it was presented well, what they were actually doing with the story. And the title's terrible. But the movie itself, I like it. It has a great soundtrack as well. Okay.
Oh, yeah, very peaceful.
Well, let's go on to Nemesis, our final film here. Daniel.
All right, so I'm done. All right, guys. Have a good one.
Daniel, what do you like about Nemesis, if anything?
So it's clear now that I am going to be the odd man out for this. I'm going to be the one that's getting teamed up on here. And I want to make a disclaimer here. I by no means think Nemesis is a perfect film. I just think it's better than Insurrection. For whatever that means. And obviously, I don't have a lot of good things to say about Insurrection. So I'm not saying it's the most amazing film. I think it has really redeemable elements in it. And I think that there's a core to it that could have been a really interesting Star Trek film and makes for a semi-interesting Star Trek film. So I like, of course, Romulans. Romulans are the bad guys, which that was the first time, right? Romulans and Nemesis, mm-hmm. That's the first time.
Yeah, because theoretically it was supposed to be Insurrections and they got vetoed.
Right. And then, of course, we got them again in 2009, but that doesn't matter. And so I love the Romulans, and we get to see the Senate.
That's a beautiful set, by the way.
Oh, that opening is wonderful. Yeah. Then we get some more Romulan lore with the Remans and stuff like that, which is cool. We get to see some glorious space porn when the Enterprise rams the Scimitar. I love it.
I love that because throughout Star Trek, there's always this threat that we're going to ram a ship, but they never do it. And here they really did it. I actually cheered in the theater on that one. I was like, they actually went through with it. They rammed the ship. Not only do they ram it, then they back the other ship out of it.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool.
It is.
And I even like the space jumping element in it before it was cool. Like in Star Trek Into Darkness.
Well, that was my tweet yesterday. I said before Kirk and Khan did a ridiculous ship-to-ship space jump, Data did it android style.
That's right. He didn't have to wear a helmet either.
But it's like Peter Pan in this movie, though. Like, I felt like that instead of just, let's just do it ridiculous so we can have, like, dodging asteroids or something.
Yeah, right. And I actually think the idea of, oh my goodness.
Shinzon.
Thank you. Shinzon is a cool concept. You know, say what you want, whether or not he should have had hair. But I think, and it's kind of amazing looking back at it now that Star Trek had Tom Hardy before he was cool, right? Like, that was cool. And a tiny, tiny, skinny little guy at the time. I think it's a cool reflection on the character. Like, and of course it's the entire film is about nature versus nurture. Of course we get B4 and Data, which will go in the other category, but then we get Picard and Shinzon. And I think that they played with it a little bit, but they could have played with it a little more and really, really made it impact the story. And finally, the last thing I'll say that I like a lot is, I don't know, I feel like they kind of sensed the end coming. So they tried to set it up. Maybe not like in the same way that Star Trek VI does, but they kind of tried to set it up as like, okay, if we're done here, let's at least put characters in interesting places for them to move forward.
So what do you dislike about Nemesis?
While I may be I might be a Nemesis apologist, I recognize there are big problems with this film. most notably the handling of the Data death situation. Come on now. If you're going to kill Data off, which fine, if that's what you think creatively is the last thing you can do that makes it interesting, I'm okay with that. I love Data. I think he's a wonderful character. Make his death matter. Don't give him another body, download all of his memories, and then kill him off, because that makes it completely pointless and completely useless.
I mean, what kind of a movie would kill off a majorly beloved character, save his memory in something else, and leave you hanging with that? That would be ridiculous.
Of course. But to be fair, Star Trek 2 had one line, and that's it. We didn't know what Katras were. Like, we didn't know this was a thing. Star Trek Nemesis is like, oh, by the way, here's somebody who looks exactly like you, who is a child and innocent and completely ignorant, but you can live in him.
Well, and you know, Picard, at the very end of the film, he walks down the corridor. Now, Picard is devastated that Data was lost. He walks down the corridor at the end of the film, and he starts to get a smile on his face, and it's almost as if the writers were saying, Picard's okay because Data's still here. Yeah. And I thought it gutted the movie, but I'll talk about that when I get to mine. Sorry. You brought it up.
I mean, what kind of a movie would kill off a major character and then bring him back 10 minutes later as if it was meaningless? That would be horrible.
No, yeah. Okay. I just think that whole... Yeah. Obviously, we'll all have something to say about it, so yeah. I won't get too far into it. But yeah, I mean, you can take any aspect of the B4 Data plotline and criticize it. I think it was bungled, completely mishandled, completely it's a mess. It's a mess. Yeah. So of course, that's the first thing. The whole four-wheel Argo thing, Come on, man. Like, I understand you want to make it more exciting. You want to give some sort of action set piece, but it's just kind of dumb. And, there are various little things like how Riker is fighting the Reeman, the bottom of the ship.
Well, you know that the Enterprise has a bottomless pit at the bottom of the ship, which just goes on forever and ever.
So there are a lot of things. Certainly are a lot of things. No shortage of things to complain about.
That deck is where Argyle distills his gin on the Enterprise E. The crew goes down there. They buy it from him. Picard does not know that deck exists. And even Riker didn't know until he found himself down there with the Reeman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it is. It is.
There actually was a second kicker in this movie. Actually, it was Argyle.
Oh, because they're going to do the spinoff series. That's right. Yeah.
So where does Nemesis rank for you, Daniel?
Well, of course, I guess since you kind of, for me, you placed...
I'm not keeping track of our rankings as we talk.
Right.
Obviously, we've already ranked the other three, but...
Right, but you had suggested that Insurrection would be 5 out of 4 for me, and I like that. So I'll give Nemesis 3 and 4.
Okay, 3 and 4. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Okay, Philip.
It's a binary number.
How do you feel about Nemesis? Now, you actually left the room as we were discussing this, I think, didn't you? I'm glad you're back with
us. Yes, I was talking on the other side of the room with myself.
The other side of the room.
And it was so I don't know what Daniel said. I'll assume it was nothing good. So, but Nemesis, we'll start with good. Let's start with good. Like, I feel like there's probably a time mark where I would be like, okay, Romulans, I sent it like that. Okay, this is interesting. The wedding, finally. Because they're so weird. Okay, sure, get married. Get away from us. Stop making it weird for everyone and just get married. So that's fine. Okay, and everyone's in their fancy dress and that's cool. And Worf, you know, and Daniel and I have had this discussion. And Chris, now that you're here, you know, we were waiting for that scene during the wedding scene where people are like, oh, hey, Worf, how's that dead wife? You know, or like, wow. Yeah, we missed that invitation.
That's not the kind of callback
but
that
you got
we're
ours.
Looking for, Philip.
But you got ours, right?
You're saying that the rest of the crew should have been insensitive to Worf. You're talking about why wasn't the Enterprise crew in You Are Cordially Invited?
Yeah.
Well,
yes.
No, the thing is, they actually wanted to do that, but they couldn't get everyone... for the episode, and they decided it's an all or nothing thing, because why would random people show up to Worf's wedding? Jonathan Frakes and LeVar Burton had offices on the lot at the time they were shooting You Are Cordially Invited, so they could have gotten them. But getting everybody back didn't work out. So, but yes, it would have made more sense that the Enterprise would have been there, right?
And there's no way to insert a line of dialogue that the Enterprise is on a mission and can't be reached. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Well, there's no effort at all to reach out.
I can understand that Worf would be pissed because Worf is like, you know, when you guys go have something important going on, I always find a way to show up. And you couldn't come to my wedding? You pita!
It's like, I wish it was one or the, like, they could, fine, if you can't get them all for the show, fine.
Yeah.
Then give Deep Space Nine some love in the movies and say, and be like, oh my goodness, the first thing people say, Worf shows up on the bridge. Hey, Worf, we're really sorry to hear about the fact you just lost your wife.
Right.
Like, why couldn't they do that? Like, one line of dialogue.
Maybe Worf could, they could say, that must explain why your voice is lower than usual in this movie.
Now, well, Daniel already has his theory. This is actually Worf's revenge by coming back. He's just staring at Troy and Riker the whole time going, yeah, that's my ex. Yep. Yep, Will.
Well, it would explain why Worf is drunk on or hungover on Romulan ale at the wedding.
It's true. That would,
although
that's true.
That does give us the one, whereas the Gilbert and Sullivan bit in Insurrection didn't really work well for me, I did love the callback here where Worf just shakes his head and goes, Irving Berlin. Yeah. So apparently he's been studying up on Earth composers since Insurrection.
Yeah. So again, so that's all great. Wedding's fine. And then it has my favorite moment. Oh, when it goes from Data singing Blue Eyes, which is awesome, to those last notes, and it's do, 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 and you see the Enterprise E coming, mm-hmm. and you're like, oh my God, it's Enterprise E! It's Enterprise E!
That's a part Daniel liked about Nemesis 2 when the Enterprise E was on screen.
That's right.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I can't, I think probably, because I'm trying to remember how it goes, like, because isn't that when they finally get the signal of B4 and they beam down? Yeah. And I think that's when it's just blah, blah. There's B4, which just doesn't make sense. There's the Argo, which doesn't make sense. It's stupid. And then, yeah, that's what Picard's going to do. He's going to drive around on a pre-prime directive planet, get machine gunned. Yeah, that's what Picard does. He's famous for that.
I did wonder why, I mean, if you're going to build a Doom Buggy, why do you put a giant laser rifle on the back of it? What are you using this thing for?
Yeah, I don't. So, because like I said this on Earl Grey. Like, it's not like they had the Argo for sale in the toy store. Why is it there? Like, that would make sense to me. Like, well, okay, I get it.
I feel
it.
Like, okay, but, I'll give you my theory in a moment. So for you, where does Nemesis rank? Is it fourth? Is it fifth? Is it 10th out of 4 movies? What is it?
Well, I mean, last, obviously. It's 4 asterisk because it doesn't get included. But I mean, you know, okay, blah, blah, blah. And then I do like, you know, the last minute. You know, that's fine. But yeah, it's just, because again, the Shinzon thing is interesting. I'll go with Daniel. That it is interesting. But it just does. And then, like, with the Troy, and I mean, I'm not saying this in a funny way. The Troy raping thing, violations. We saw that already. The episode, violations.
We did. Although, I think that Marina Sirtis did a very good job in this movie with the acting through that. She has, one thing this movie highlights for me, actually all the TNG movies, is how far she in particular came in her acting from Encounter at Farpoint. At the beginning of TNG, you had some great performances like Patrick Stewart, but the cast overall wasn't great. I mean, the acting wasn't great. LeVar Burton was great. Patrick Stewart. But by the time you get to the end, they're all so good. And I don't know if it was being, I think it's being around each other for so many years. But Troy, for me in the movies, Troy is really excellent.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, as soon as she got into the uniform she and got real stories, she was good. But yeah, so Nemesis, it's just, to me, there's just so many things that are just like, what are you doing to this thing I really love? But yeah, okay. So I mean, I won't run up filibuster, so I'll just say, yeah.
So here's the thing for me with Nemesis. I don't think this is anywhere near the bad film that fans make it out to be. Someone told me yesterday, too, that this is TNG's Star Trek V. Which I also don't agree with, because I think Nemesis is a much better movie than Star Trek V is. I think they both have very good concepts underneath them for the most part, and neither one is executed very well. But the biggest problem with Nemesis, I think, is fan expectations. And I'm included in that. Like, what do I want to see as a Star Trek film versus just a film? If you watch Nemesis as just a motion picture and sort of an action movie and a mystery as well, and kind of a dark story, it actually works decently as a motion picture, but it doesn't feel like a Star Trek film. It feels so different from the other three TNG films and the rest of Star Trek. And it starts right at the beginning with the weird typeface for the name of the movie. Like, you know that Stuart Baird went into this not to make a Star Trek movie, but just to make some other movie that he wanted to make and some story he wanted to tell visually. And the wedding scene is one of the most redeeming parts of Nemesis. It's what we waited 15 years for as Star Trek fans. And Stuart Baird wanted to cut it out of the movie because it wasn't going anywhere. Like, what does this have to do with the story? What does it have to do with the story? This is a Star Trek movie. We've been waiting for this wedding since Encounter at Farpoint, since 1987. Let us have the moment. And it was trimmed down to the point, you know, there was going to be more there with Will Wheaton. We got to see Guinan a bit. Thank goodness we got what we did from it, because it's great and it's moving and you can feel the relationship and the energy between Picard and Riker and Troy and everyone. And then you get the doom buggy scene. And I also tweeted yesterday when I was watching Nemesis that the difference between the wedding of Riker and Troy and the doom buggy scene sums up Stuart Baird's approach to this movie. And then someone asked me to clarify that. And I thought it was pretty clear, but I guess it wasn't. But what I was saying there was that the fact that he wanted to remove the wedding scene from the film and spent all of this time on this ridiculous doom buggy chase through the desert on this planet and the crazy remote control ship where you can, you know, General Lee off a cliff and you can land in a space barely larger than the vehicle itself, barely larger than the Argo, and yet these clamps come in and everyone's okay. And I'm thinking back to the barricading of the shuttle in The Final Frontier when they crashed the shuttle into the shuttle bay on the Enterprise.
Plan B.
Yeah. And it was very, very similar to that as well. So another comparison between Nemesis and Star Trek V. But if you get beyond all of that, though, the story itself, the concept is interesting. The Romulans want to clone Picard in some kind of plot. I think it would have worked better if they could have actually somehow had... It's a story that works well as a novel, where you can't see the characters, but you can really think, like, this is the same exact person, but younger. The fact that Tom Hardy didn't quite look like Picard, and then they had to explain it with the whole thing about him being beaten up in the mines, and, like, I'm not quite the face you remember, is it? That's them saying, we know our concept here doesn't quite work visually, so we're going to explain it somehow. And unlike Worf showing up in Insurrection, they didn't just fade out the audio and go on to the story in this case. But I don't know. The story itself, you know, I think Patrick Stewart is excellent in this movie. And I kind of enjoy watching it as long as I'm not expecting it to be a TNG movie like the other three or really relate to the series. It has one of the great callbacks to the original series in it. After Data has died, Picard gathers everyone and he pours the wine and they raise the glasses and he says, absent friends, which is the scene from The Search for Spock after Spock is dead and they have the drinks and Kirk says, absent friends. It was a wonderful callback. And that whole scene for me is great. The whole end of the movie is excellent, except if they could have just restrained themselves. When Riker leaves Picard's ready room, that should have cut to the scene, the final scene of the Enterprise in dry dock, and then credits. If they had done that, it would have been the perfect ending for TNG, because everyone's moving on with their lives. It's sad. I mean, it's a very melancholy ending. And I think that also might be why this movie doesn't connect with fans as much, that it is sort of a depressing film. And it is sad. But I actually wanted to see it in that way because they ruined the movie with the whole B4 thing. It just complete ridiculous nonsense. Picard sitting there talking to B4 and B4 singing Blue Skies, humming Blue Skies. And Picard explaining, oh, your brother was this and la la la. I'm like, it's not Data. You know, if Data's going to die, let him die. Data sacrificed himself. He put the transporter thing on Picard, gave Picard no time to protest, went over, explosion. Geordi is crying on the bridge. And why do you gut the movie? Why do you gut the movie before? That's what I dislike so much about Nemesis, is the final scene with Picard and B4. That's it.
It's as if like they had like a clone of Trip that they pulled out of the drawer in the last minute of These Are the Voyages.
But with Data, it was so much like this is the culmination of his journey. He wanted to become human. They played up the emotion chip thing. They did all this. He did the ultimate thing. He sacrificed himself for his family. He completed his journey. Why do you ruin it like that? So that's why I dislike the film. I actually don't dislike the film. I like Nemesis fairly well. I just really dislike that final scene and what they did. Not killing Data, but by suggesting that he's not dead because B4 is still there. So that's where I am with that. So for me, Nemesis is fourth on my list, but it's not fourth in I hate this movie, it sucks, they shouldn't have made this movie. I think there are a lot of redeeming qualities to this movie, and I always encourage people, I try to find the good in Star Trek, right? I encourage people, watch Nemesis. Don't try to get everything you want from TNG out of it. Just watch it as a film. And, you know, watch Picard, watch some of the things that goes on with the characters in this film. And it's not as bad as people make it out to be.
And then watch All Good Things.
That's right. The true ending to TNG.
All right.
That's right.
Okay, so well, let's wrap up. We've gone like an hour and 20 minutes here. So this is a super, but it is a special topic. It's a special feature. And we're doing four movies here. But let's wrap up with just a final comparison of the film's final thoughts on TNG's big screen run. Daniel, what else do you want to say about TNG on the big screen?
You know, as you were talking there specifically about Nemesis, it comes to my mind that maybe they were, and I don't think Stuart Baird was doing this, but it almost seems like the movie is trying to be both Star Trek II and Star Trek VI at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that.
And it fails on both of those levels. And I think as a TNG fan, a true DNG fan, I would call myself, even though I don't like Insurrection, Chris. You know,
but you do like Justice, so there you go.
Again, that's Phillips' thing, but that's okay.
Oh, okay, all right. Well, you went along with it, so.
By silence. Silence is a sin on Earl Grey.
You did not delete the file after you recorded, so the show still got
it's
out.
True, it's true.
So you're a true fan.
I guess as a DNG fan, the biggest regret I have is that we don't get our Star Trek VI. And I think that's why Nemesis is regarded so negatively, because it's looked at as the last Star Trek film, whether or not it was produced that way or whatever. It's looked at in the same way that Star Trek VI is. And Star Trek VI is so perfect on every level. I mean, it would be hard enough even with a director that wanted to make a good Star Trek movie, you know? And so I'm still hopeful maybe sometime in the future, what would the way that entertainment is changing and evolving, maybe someday we'll get like a short or something with the TNG crew.
Yeah. Well, you know, Brent Spiner, I think, has said, like, I can't come back and play Data now because I'm much older. But with B4, you could say something like B4's aging chip malfunctioned or something. And so there, now he's older.
Yeah, of course. And I wouldn't complain. I would totally eat that up. And I hope Netflix picks up, I don't know, they decide to start doing short series or mini series or something. And somebody decides, oh my goodness, let's get these people back together just for one last hurrah.
Because Sir Patrick hasn't aged. I don't know what Brent's problem is.
That's true.
Yeah, Patrick Stewart, man. Boy, I hope I'm in... I won't be, but I hope I'm in such good shape when I'm his age.
Yeah, so, you know, we as Star Trek fans, we have TOS movies and we have TNG movies. And TOS movies aren't always successful, but they definitely have a better run than we do, no matter how you look at it. And that's fine. That's great. It's wonderful. I love the TOS movies, but it's just... And I guess we can't complain because we're not Voyager, Deep Space Nine, or Enterprise fans, right? Like, well, they didn't get anything.
I think...
Well, Daniel, don't say that.
Just to that point, Daniel, I think that you can't really compare them because I think the problem... This may be a problem for how TNG movies are received by fans, actually, as I see it. With the TOS movies, they're kind of their own thing. There's the original series... Mm-hmm. And then there are the TOS movies. There's the film era. And they're so far apart in time that you don't really feel like they're connected other than that they are the same characters. Because Kirk is a very different person in the films than he is in series. But because the TNG films and the series are just smashed right up together, it's really hard to separate these things in your mind. If there had been a gap of 7 or 8 or 10 or however many years, you know, maybe not as large of a gap as the original series, but maybe a decade, I think that the movies would be held in a different regard.
And I think you're exactly right. And that's kind of why I think and hope that maybe we do get to see them later on down the road, because that would really be an interesting dynamic. And we would really get to see, like, the same way that the TOS characters did, you know, we would actually get to see a huge leap from what we knew to what we know now. Anyways, I don't hate any of the movies, kind of. You know, I can try to find good things in all of them.
I like how you qualify that.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm glad we got them. I wish maybe there were not so many mistakes made, but that's fine. It is what it is, and it's Star Trek history, and that's great. And I will say that I'm at least grateful for what we got as TNG fans.
How about you, Philip?
Yeah, I'm almost playing devil's advocate with myself, saying, should we even have had films? I mean, of course the answer is yes, but I'm thinking, you know, it's such a coda for me. Like, I can watch those 7 seasons and be happy. Mm. You know, I love the E. We've talked about it on Earl Grey. We love the E.
Well, actually, you talk about wanting to have your Star Trek 6. I mean, All Good Things was that when they pan out from the poker table.
Because I think the difference is, and I know people may disagree, and Chris, you may be one of them, the difference between TNG and the other series, right? Because DS9 has an ending, you know, even though it's not ending, but it's an ending. Voyager has an ending, you know, somewhat. They arrived home, right? I know Enterprise doesn't, but they tried to make it whatever that was. But TNG doesn't need one, right? Because they're still out there.
Right.
They're still out there on their continuing voyage. We don't need to have, and this is how everyone ended up. We don't need that. We don't want that. We want them to be on that mission forever. So that's where All Good Things leaves us. And so it's sort of this coda of Generations, First Contact, Insurrection, Nemesis. And like we've talked, I mean, there's some I'm more of a fan than others. And so I'm like, I can almost just watch the TV series and be happy. I don't need the movies. Now, of course, they're good ones, but I don't need them.
Yeah. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Agree.
Yeah. And I think I agree with that the final scene of All Good Things is so perfect that just let it go there. That it just, from a storytelling standpoint, just let it go there. Now, obviously, from a money-making standpoint, you want to do motion pictures. And of course, fans always want new stories. And so that's understandable as well. But
and
season 8, baby.
And sometimes in my mind, I actually separate the two. Like, I feel like the movie universe TNG is like a JJ universe, kind of. Like, it's just a separate entity. When I think about TNG, I think that there are 20 years of seasons that we just don't see, that the Enterprise D goes away on that mission at the end of that mission and just continues on and just continues having adventures, which is of course the point of the whole episode. And so you're right. I agree wholeheartedly with you, Philip.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Daniel, you feel what I feel. In fact, you feel exactly what I feel.
Well, for me on the films, I like things about all of them. There are a few things that I dislike about each of them as well. The movie I have the most problems with, of course, is Nemesis, but that's we've done a show on Nemesis. We've actually done a Ready Room on each of these films individually. I don't have the numbers right on hand like Philip would if he were the host of the Ready Room. But actually, we did the movies early on the Ready Room for the most part. So most of them have probably fallen out of iTunes by now. They're probably somewhere in those first 60 or so shows there. But they'll be coming back sometime soon. I'm working on getting everything back into iTunes. But anyway, the movies they mean different things to me. Generations has that connection from when I was in university, went with my friends to see it in the theater, had the soundtrack in my car, listened to it constantly. I actually like the television feel being on the big screen in that movie. But I also like the fact that after that, they gave us a new ship and new uniforms, and we had more of a motion picture feel in First Contact. Great story there. Insurrection, I think it's a great character story. And I actually like the casting of the Baku anyway on there, especially with Donna Murphy. And then Nemesis, we get the wedding scene. We get I think a good story for Picard as well. But you're seeing so much growth in Picard. And visually, it's actually an interesting movie. It just doesn't feel like Star Trek. That's where I am on that one. And I hadn't really thought about not having TNG movies before, but Philip, I think you've made a great point here, and I'm glad we have them. But unfortunately, I can't separate them in my mind in the way that I separate the original series and the TOS films, or the way that I separate the two JJ films and the rest of Star Trek, just because there's too much continuity through them, especially since, like I said about First Contact, they actually punch up the big goodbye, and they have all these connections in there that are so direct. Cameos, I didn't mention cameos. I'm not a huge fan of cameos in general, but I love the cameo of the EMH in First Contact because it made sense. I loved seeing Ethan Phillips in there out of makeup in First Contact. I thought that was a cool cameo. I really didn't like Janeway's cameo in Nemesis. It felt forced. It felt like we got to throw Janeway in this movie somewhere. So, I mean, of all the admirals, why is Picard going to get a call from Janeway? Other than it feels like maybe this Dougherty thing and the Baku is not really that important. And Janeway's kind of a new admiral. So let's have her be the one that calls, because the big guns, they're busy doing their other badmiral stuff. You know, Nechayev is getting new shoulder pads on her uniform. Who knows what's going on there? They're having a belt buckle convention in Sausalita. I don't know.
Just give her time, Chris. She will prove that she's a badmiral. Don't worry about that. I know.
So
yes, Janeway is so new, she already has more than one pip. Like, don't get me started on the lack of one pip admirals.
So I love the films, though. I mean, I don't think there's any episode of Star Trek or movie that I don't like something about. So there we go. All right, guys. Well, thanks for this marathon show today talking about the TNG films, TNG films face-off. Before we go, Philip, you've been the spokesperson for Earl Grey, but you're going to get to do your spiel in the closing. So, Daniel, tell everyone where they can find you guys and your TNG talk, and of course, you personally.
Right. Well, of course, they can find me on Earl Grey every week. And I used to do it with Philip, but he's actually no longer welcome. So, no, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. So they can find me there every week. And we're talking about TNG topics all the time. And we've done All Good Things. We've done Generations. We've done First Contact. And, we'll get around to doing Insurrection and Nemesis soon. So
no, we won't.
So check us out on there. And of course, you could find me personally on Twitter. My handle is OneUpDan, and that is the number, not the word.
Very good. All right. Thanks again, Daniel.
Thanks, guys.
Well, Chris, that was great to have, not my better third, but one of my thirds. I have a bunch of good thirds.
You guys are still going at each other.
He's not even here anymore. We love Earl Grey. We love to joke. And I hope everyone knows that everything that Daniel and I, and I'll even talk on behalf of Chris, you know, we all love Trek. Anything we have said that sounds bad, we love it anyway. So please don't take any offense by anything.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, it was great having Daniel on. It's too bad Darren couldn't be here. He had a lot going on, so we didn't get the full unholy trio from Earl Grey. Still trying to figure out what exactly that means, but I like the way it sounds. So too bad we couldn't have you all on, but having Daniel on was great as well. But TNG films aren't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network over the past week. So here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
It was the biggest opening ever for a movie. And, you know, it got huge critical acclaim and success. And fans were, you know, most, not every, but most fans were really happy with it.
Earl Grey.
Kids these days, gosh, back in my day, our nacelles were round and we went warp 5.
And our dishes were large.
Our dishes were large and we liked it that way.
The Ready Room.
Yeah, one of the things I noticed about that in terms of the population is everybody on a Miniar seems to have a number in their name, which may indicate that they have a lot of children, perhaps, to kind of compensate for the fact that they're killing 3 million people a year.
The Orb.
Mourn chest bumping, a dancing Bolian is one of the best scenes in Deep Space Nine.
So awesome.
To the journey! When you brought it up, I was like, that's right, because it's that weird moment when you're like, is that Dietrich Bader? What's going on?
Yes, it is. Yes,
and
indeed it is.
And he had this weird kind of like Jerry curl thing going on in his hair. Commentary, Trek Stars.
There was even a little bit of an Voyager. That was Kes. But then they, you know, decided to not do that and just made her a space carry, which is what her name should have been. Neelix and space carry.
Warp 5.
I feel like that's in a word that didn't exist until DVDs existed. Like, no one had the best Betamax release of the year.
Right.
It just wasn't a thing.
And it always goes to the one studio that decided not to turn their back on Betamax.
Continuing mission.
I think it will be fun for younger people. I think it will be fun for people that can connect with those characters in this family situation.
Literary Treks.
The relationship that she's having with Spock at this point is one of a very deep friendship, like a very deep friendship. And she's caring for her friend who's gone through what can only be considered a trauma.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. And don't forget, we also have that new show, the official podcast of Star Trek Axanar. Check that out as well. And you can find our shows everywhere that you get your podcasts. We're all over the place. We are the Jeffrey Combs of Star Trek podcasts.
He is everywhere.
And you can also get all the episodes in the Trek FM Complete Master Feed that contains every episode of everything that we do. If you're over in iTunes or on Stitcher, you'll want to take advantage of our reviews promotion that we're doing right now. You can win great Star Trek prizes just for reviewing our shows. We love hearing from you, of course, and we want to know what you think about the shows, but reviews are also important to us because they play a factor in how we rank in the iTunes store and on Stitcher. The more reviews we have, the easier it is for people to find our shows in the stores, and we can bring more Star Trek fans into the Trek FM family. And we want to give you some incentive to leave us some reviews because we know that if you're like us, you're probably listening when you're doing something else. You're not near a keyboard at the time. You can't quickly leave a review. So we want to encourage you to take some time when you do have a moment at a computer and to share your thoughts on the show. We're giving away some great Star Trek prizes, including a season of Star Trek on Blu-ray or DVD of your choice, some Star Trek novels of your choice, also some official starships from Japan, the official starships collection. Those have the magazine in Japanese, so it's kind of a cool collectible. Also, a full set of our original alien art badges. And Philip, we've gotten quite a few reviews over the past week or so since we've been running this promotion. I know you've gotten quite a few on Earl Grey, and we've had some for the Ready Room as well, and I'd like to share a couple of those with everyone today. Ryan123450, which, Ryan, I really hope that's not your password for iTunes, but Ryan123450 left us a 5-star review and said, "The number one Star Trek podcast." Well, I appreciate that, Ryan. "If you only listen to one Star Trek podcast, this should be it. The hosts are great, and they have very interesting guests. News and discussion in every episode, along with the fact that this is only one of many podcasts on the Trek FM network. Find your favorite." thank you, Ryan. Appreciate the vote of confidence there for the Ready Room. And I'm glad you like the fact that we do have different groups of panelists every single week to keep the show fresh, keep the opinions different. Also, WLDKT1. What do you think that means, Philip?
WLDKT1. Is that like a really long binar name?
Maybe. Do they use letters?
They can only have
names?
So many 0 1s, 1 0 0 1s, 1 1 1 0 0s. Yeah.
Okay, so you run out, and eventually you start using letters. Okay, maybe those binars—they've spent too much time on Earth, you know, fixing computers at Starfleet headquarters or such, and they've decided that, you know, letters have crept into their vocabulary.
Well, I was always told that the wildest parties over at the embassies was the binar embassy.
Oh yeah. Yeah, the binar compound. Yeah, so, well, I don't know exactly how to pronounce this. Woodcat1. But WLDKT1 left us a review. 5 stars. Enjoyable General Trek podcast. I enjoy the discussion of Trek in general and love how it keeps me up to date on the latest Trek news. I also like that it will discuss all the different Trek series so I can keep an eye on series that I don't like, in quotes, enough to subscribe to a whole podcast. So that actually is part of the purpose of the Ready Room. You know, we do have our specialized shows, like Philip, you have Earl Grey for TNG. I have The Orb with Matthew Rushing for DS9, and I also have Warp 5 for Enterprise. Those are for people who really do love those specific series. But the Ready Room is all about talking about Star Trek as a whole. So thank you for these reviews, and for everyone else, we do have some others, I'll share them on a future show, and for everyone else, go leave yours and get your name in the drawing of our reviews promotion. There are 2 steps. What you need to do is to leave a review on iTunes and or Stitcher, and then go to trek.fm/review, fill out the form that you find there. That gives us all the information we need to match you up to the reviews and to get your name in the drawing for the prizes. You can only review each show once on each platform, of course, but you can review the same show on both. So, for example, you can review The Ready Room on iTunes and on Stitcher, and that counts as 2 entries. And you can review all the different shows that you listen to. Plus, you can review the master feed, and that will count as an entry as well. So, again, review us in iTunes and on Stitcher. Go to trek.fm/review afterwards. Submit the form that you find there. And the deadline for this is midnight, July 31st. Winners will be drawn at random from all entries received by that date. Now, if you would like to leave feedback on TNG films or anything that we talked about in the show today, let us know which episodes you want to see as theatrical productions or musicals. We'd love to know that as well. There are a number of ways that you can get in touch with us. You can find us on Twitter. Our username is TrekFM. On Facebook, we're facebook.com/TrekFM. We have a community on G+. Just search for that. You can send us voicemail using the widget in the sidebar on the show page on our website. And we also have a contact form, trek.fm/contact. That comes to us by email. And we have forums at trek.fm/forums. Now, Philip, when you're not rewatching Nemesis for the 100th time and, you know, telling everyone online how much you love the film, where can people find you?
Well, they can find me talking all things TNG along with my brothers. Well, not like the episode brothers, because one of those was evil.
And not like before, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, but my regular TNG brothers, Darren Moser and Daniel Prue on Earl Grey each and every week right here on Trek FM. And of course, they can find me on Twitter as always. My handle is NC Public Servant. That's NC like North Carolina.
If you move, like if you move to South Carolina, are you going to become SC Public Servant?
Chris, much like the Enterprise, you never move on from where you are, and it's never going to happen. I will always be a North Carolinian born, North Carolinian bred, and when I'll die, I'll be a North Carolinian dead.
All right. Very good. Well, if you'd like to find me, you can find me on Twitter as well. My username is C. Brian Jones, the letter C and Brian with a Y. I'm also on Facebook, facebook.com/CBrianJones. Feel free to hit me up there. And also I have my own website, cbrianjones.com. And then I do a lot of shows on the network. I just mentioned The Orb and Warp 5. Matthew Rushing and I also do literary treks, Star Trek books and comics, and we interview authors. I also have Matterstream, Hyperchannel as our daily news show. I'm on the new Axanar podcast with Alec Peters, and also Continuing Mission, all about fan films. So check those out if you're interested. All right, Philip, well, I'm going to have to let you go. I've got to head back down and make sure that the Evora haven't eaten all the flowers.
Okay, well, I know you used to cut quite the rug in your day, but it's time to stick or ram an Enterprise E into it, because the Ready Room is done.